Being a good parent isn't just about having a set of skills or knowing the right thing to do all the time. Ask any good parent you know. They can tell you their pro tips, but most are happy to admit that a lot of parenting feels like winging it. Who we are and how we continue to grow matters because our kids pick up most of what they learn from us by watching how we do things, not by listening to our instructions. So join me on this journey of remodeling our mindsets so that our actions speak to those watching. I'm Dr. Dina Shelton, and this is Remodel Parenting. Welcome back, everyone, to Remodel Parenting. It's great to be back with you. This summer, we did a great long series in historical psychological studies and what we could learn from them. And as I was preparing for that series, another piece of research popped up that I had been really interested in years ago when it first came out, but realized that it was still going on. And so this next series that I'm moving into is actually learning about family management from Google. And Google, of course, is known as one of the most effective and successful companies in the world. And part of that is how innovative they have been in their perception of and the execution of management in their company. In the early 2000s, Google began to experiment with ongoing questions about management and if it was really necessary. And this came out of multiple facets. Mostly, according to Google, it was about their technological employees, their engineers, and also just millennial culture in general with desires for less management and less oversight and questions about whether managers were really necessary. Google's so innovative, they went as far in, I think it was about 2002, and tested out lateralizing their entire company and created a space where there was no hierarchical structure. Now, that only lasted for a few months. As families, we can understand why that would be, but Google needed to test it out to see, and it didn't work because there was no structure for people to go to for help, and everyone ended up going to one person, and that person's job at the top became managing all of the small problems. So they realized quickly that managers were required and were going to be necessary at Google, but that traditional management styles and the way that things went with management, people had a bad taste in their mouth. And so they decided to really search and dig into their processes and the way that they did things to see how management could be the best it could possibly be at Google. And they did extensive research. And when I say extensive, I mean extensive. It started in the early 2000s. It's still going on today. And they have it as an ongoing process that is both collection and information for training their managers and their leaders at Google. In 2008, that was when they began what they call Project Oxygen, and it was designed to be a multi-year data collection piece when it started, but it has become ongoing, and it is what they use to train effective managers and raise up the next generation of leaders at Google. But the research initiative studied their very best managers to determine what they were doing that made them so effective in the company and so liked by their employees. Now, why am I saying all of this? You may be listening to this and going, I listen to this podcast to get parenting help or tips or strategies or just to expand what I think about, you know, managing my family. And I am using this as a guide because as I read what they found, I was so inspired. As someone who works and leads other people, I was inspired. But I also really found a lot of overlap in what they found and my work as a systems-based counselor. Systems repeat themselves, and they show up with the same types of strategies and the same types of patterns, no matter what type of system we're in. And so family systems, business and work systems, church and community group systems, economic and government leadership systems, you can zoom in and out and kind of zone into places and watch the same types of patterns form and happen across all of them. And we understand that we can really use what we learn about some systems and apply them practically to others. So while couples and families aren't businesses, there's no question that couples and families have to be run and managed. The relationship piece of our experiences must be cared for, managed, and done on purpose. It's not something that happens on the sidelines or just in passing. And I'll give you an example of this. There's a Sternberg's triangular theory of relationships. that we use when we're teaching marriage and family theory. Sternberg said, the most healthy couple relationships consist of three sides that are cared for and balanced. And that is that couples are they have a passionate side to their relationship, they have a friendship or intimacy side to their relationship, and they have a commitment, an ongoing working side of their relationship. So in more casual terms, I would tell my classes that the most effective couples are friends, lovers, and business partners, and they know how to do those roles well with one another and can navigate between those roles in a healthy way. I think that there is a lot of that that moves into our families too, that when we are in a family relationship and when we have children, we have to be able to show up as whole humans and be connected to these other people, especially these other people that we're raising and growing into adulthood, but also to be able to manage and grow and cultivate them into the people that they need to be. I'm pretty well known for saying that we're never really raising kids, we're raising future adults. And so if we get honed in on our children at the age that they are and not recognizing where they need to be growing and developing, sometimes we can miss out on some things with them as well. So I am constantly looking for inspiration in general to guide me from anywhere I can get it, to be honest. And project management really did that for me as I was looking at the findings and how they wrote it out. What they found initially were 8 characteristics Google said that their best leaders had, and they used those then to create trainings. And when I read that, I wondered what the overlap might be with parents and their children. And what if we rerouted our thinking in terms of the effective people and task management of our families to the mindset that we're training this next group to do the same, right? Just like we are in businesses and companies. So I took the findings and I loved what I found when I dived into them, and Google continued to expand their research, and they actually added a few more later. So there are 10 characteristics that they are using actively to describe and then cultivate their best leaders in their company. And I've taken those characteristics and I paired them up for the next 5 episodes, because as I put them together, I found that they were really connected, they're pairs that are connected and are offering similar guidance for an area of our families. So for this episode, I titled it Vision and Feedback because it encompasses 2 of the themes that Google discovered. Google said, one, a great leader has a clear vision or strategy for their team. And 2, a great leader supports, they said, career development and discusses performance with their team members. And this makes complete sense in a corporate world. Any of us who has a job or has ever had a job, we know that the best leaders that we have had usually could sell their vision to us, and we wanted to get on board and move the vision that they sold to us forward. We wanted to contribute to that, but that also our favorite managers and bosses tend to be people who can clearly articulate to us what we're doing well and where we need to grow, and are discussing that with us and helping us cultivate our own processes and our own professional development. So in the work world, it makes sense, but it also makes sense in a family. If we look at a family system where parents are the managers and kids are the employees who have their own jobs, that might sound like a stretch, but in reality, that is very accurate to what we experience. When kids are born, they're a whole person already. They have their own mindset, their own ideas, their own ways of doing things, their own mentality about things. And any of us who has children has experienced that in a way where at some point we think, how are they this strong-willed or this determined? Where did they get these characteristics from? Some of it is just dropped in and born in them. And their jobs as humans is to grow and develop in all of the things that they have naturally and that are part of their personality, and to cultivate those, develop them, train them, grow them in ways so that they are the most effective they can be in the world and with other people to have healthy relationships. They have a job that they're doing as they're growing up. Our job as parents is to partner with them to help that happen, right? because kids do not naturally want to grow and develop themselves necessarily. They want life to be easy, and they want things to be easy to navigate, easy to walk through. They don't really look for challenges and obstacles, but challenges and obstacles help us grow. And so as parents, we tend to be the feedback givers and the ones who guide and give direction and give the strategy and the vision. And this sounds a lot like what Google's talking about in terms of their best leaders and managers. So I'll start with the first one of having a clear vision and strategy for our family can mean a wide variety of things. Vision is the long-term goal. It's the big picture things that we have in our hearts that we want to see happen with our families. And many parents have the same vision for their children or similar visions. We want to see our children grow up and be good, productive, solid humans who can have healthy relationships with others and who see themselves in a realistic way and contribute effectively to the world around them. Now, we may have other ideas and visions and goals for our kids that include more specific things, but when we really go to vision casting, it tends to sound pretty similar for most parents. Strategy, though, is the steps that get us to the vision ultimately. And so this is a goal-type process where we have the overall ideas, but we also have to determine the steps in between, or you never reach the outcomes of a goal or a vision if you're not doing the steps in between to actually get there. So we can expect strong outcomes from our kids, but we have to be engaged with them in the strategy development. Hoping that our kids turn out to be, you know, moral and effective people is something that, I mean, I don't know any parents who would say, I don't really care if my kid is a moral, upstanding, good person. Parents want their kids to do well and to do well for others. However, our kids don't just turn out to be moral people and altruistic and empathic and connected to others by themselves, because they're just not built that way in general. They tend to be built in a way that guides them to be more selfish, more egotistical. That's very normal developmentally. And they have to help go through these developmental milestones and learn how to create healthy and effective relationships. Well, we can have this goal of, hey, I want you to be a good person, and we can even be establishing consequence systems or discipline along the way. But if we're not helping our kids strategize and really work on what are your particular milestones, what are you missing here, and how do you develop to become better in all of this in the long run? Having a child who is more selfish and tends to try to get as much for themselves as they can at the expense of other people is different from having a child who maybe struggles with empathy and doesn't really see how his or her interactions affect other people around them. And so we have to be in tune to what's going on specifically with our kids so that we can help them develop strategies and sometimes develop strategies for them. An example may be that if we want to see our kids grow in responsibility really at any age, it takes steps to get there, and it oftentimes requires us to map out consequences and allow those consequences to take place and happen. Kids are not intrinsically motivated to do a whole lot. They tend to be very externally motivated by the rewards or consequences they're going to receive. So, for example, and this is for any school-age kid, hey, it's your job to take care of your own schoolwork, and if you don't put your schoolwork in your backpack and you don't take it to school, I'm not going to make extra trips anymore to bring you your work so you can turn it in on time. Part of doing a good job on your work is turning it in and keeping up with it, so you have to do that part too. Now, this is where it gets difficult for parents. I don't know about you guys, but it's really hard to let my kids fail. It is hard when we can do something to intervene to choose not to. Sometimes because of our own internal struggle and issues. If I say no, then they're going to feel like I've let them down. They're going to feel like I'm not on their side or on their team. They're going to feel they could, and on and on and on. However, without real life consequences of our own actions, we don't learn. Many times we just do not learn how to do the actions beforehand that keep the problems from continuing to happen. So we have to be willing to sit in the discomfort sometimes ourselves of letting our children fail and watching that happen and connecting with them. It's not being cold or calloused, but connecting with them in the disappointment and the frustration of that, but not solving it for them. Developing a clear vision as parents takes time, thought, and collaboration if we're co-parenting. And there's no one way to do that. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, hey, take a vision retreat. And I do love that idea. And my husband and I try to do that at the start of every year to go away, take a night, unwind, and then spend a day really thinking through and praying through and casting vision for what we want to see happen for our family in the next year so that we're aligned and we're in the same thought process. It's great if you can do that and get away, but it's hard to make that time. So it's not required. So I suggest really finding concentrated time to think about this and share it with the person you're co-parenting with so that you can have this shared vision together. But get creative. If you can't go away for a night or two, weekend, whatever it is, even if you just find another couple who's wanting to do the same thing, pick a day and swap kids for the half day and plan for it, get ready, and really use your best time. It's not something that has to happen in a really long-term space. And so this leads to the second interpretation that great leaders support development and discuss performance. When we as parents are looking through this lens, we're not necessarily talking about career development like Google is, but let's be honest, everything that we teach our kids and train our kids in changes how they work as adults. That's part of it. But all of us are constantly developing as people. Just a side note, development doesn't stop just because you reach a certain age or you reach adulthood. Now, kids are developing at a much more rapid rate than what adults do. And up to the age of 25, that is a reality. However, many people think that after they hit 25, development just stops. And then you're just an adult until you become old. And that's not that simple. There are multiple stages of adulthood, of family development, of experiences in life, and then of just natural internal development that cause restarts and reimagine places and shifting in us that we have to be gentle and kind with in our own hearts and lives and with ourselves, not just with our kids. And if we're not very patient with ourselves and the development that we are still doing as adults, we usually are not able to be very patient with our children in that either. So back to Google, they found their best leaders were active in their employees' development, and their employees felt the most support with ongoing feedback about their performance. It wasn't just positive feedback about performance. Employees felt like they knew where they stood and they knew how to get better in what they were doing. As parents, we can cultivate the same environment for our families, normalizing each of our awareness of where we're strong, where we're growing, and what we're actively working on to get there is a really practical way to start because our kids begin to hear the language of that, that we're in touch with, here's where I'm doing well and where I'm strong. Here's where I'm not doing so well and I would like to grow, and here's what I'm doing in between. They can watch us celebrate our wins. They can watch us navigate our failures. They can have a place to encourage us so that we can be encouraged by them and they can see their place in that family system, but it maps out for them what it looks like and sounds like for a person to be actively growing. Modeling that is one of the most powerful things that we can do for our kids. But we also do it by being close to our kids' work on their growth and goals and offering them feedback in both successes and failures. And yes, in my house, we do call them failures. I am not one that is prone to softening language because in my experience and in my training in attachment and connection, softening failures and disappointments and places where we don't do so well actually decreases our connection. Because if we have to be perceived as good to be loved, then it really harms or hinders our ability to feel loved in the spaces where we're not as okay. And so in our home, failure is not a bad word, and saying you haven't done something well or calling that out and being honest about that is not something that we shy away from. And so we talk really clearly and really carefully with our kids about their strengths, about their weaknesses, about what they're prone to, and try to guide them in that. Now, does that always go really well just because we have the great idea about it? No, it does not, right? These dicey conversations can be difficult to navigate, and they can come with a lot of anxiety and stress and frustration. It can come with miscommunication and struggles to really stay on top of the connection piece that we want so desperately with our kids. But setting vision to guide everyone helps align the family goals. And when we all know what we're working toward, it's easier to notice if we get off track or need to be rerouted. And we're much more likely to consent to rerouting, to lean into it instead of away. That's not just adults, that's also kids. When we all know that we're working for the same thing, we have shared language around that, it is so much easier to say, yep, I'm not contributing to that right now, and I'm going to change what I'm doing. It also helps our kids to buy into that vision, and it sets the example for them to capture a vision for their own lives so that they can turn around and do this too, catch a vision and create strategy for what they want to be in their lives. And that lasts far beyond our influence on them as the parents that we are in these stages where we're raising them. I hope that you are enjoying this topic and you're getting as inspired as I did by it, and that you'll tune in for the next 4 episodes as I unpack the other findings from Project Oxygen from Google and how they can enhance our family experience. Thank you so much for listening to Remodel Parenting. If you know someone who could benefit from this episode, I hope you'll share it with them. And if you love what we're doing, like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you have topics you'd like to hear about, email us at info@theremodelproject.com.